get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming man who infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
If your vibe is the earlier the better, Lowe's early Black Friday deals are a no-brainer. Get up to 35% off select major appliances, and rewards members get free delivery, haul-away, basic installation, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 11/4. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change. LG member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
You are listening to The Evidence Locker. Thank you for choosing our podcast. Our sponsors make it possible for us to keep bringing you new episodes. Please support them as they have some great deals just for you, our listeners. If you prefer to listen to ad-free content, simply find us on Patreon, where plans start from as little as $2 a month. 25% of these proceeds are donated to the Doe Network, working to bring closure to international cold cases. For more information, follow the link in the show notes. Our cases deal with true crimes and real people. Some parts are graphic in nature, and listener discretion is advised. Each episode is produced with the utmost respect to the victims, their families, and loved ones. On the night of November 7th, 1974, Lady Veronica Lucan, the estranged wife of Lord John Lucan, was attacked, and her nanny Sandra Rivett was brutally murdered in her home in Belgravia, London. After the attack, Lady Lucan managed to escape and run to a nearby pub, where she frantically pleaded for help. The police arrived at the eerily quiet scene of the Lucan home. They made their way through the house and did not find anything at first. As they reached the basement, where the kitchen was located, they saw blood spattered on the walls and floors, and Sandra's body was lying in a pool of blood. The attack and events that followed sent shockwaves through the British aristocracy, and the police launched a massive manhunt to find the suspected perpetrator. All fingers pointed to Lord Lucan, who had been involved in a bitter custody battle with his ex-wife over their 3 children. Lord Lucan was a colorful character who had a reputation for gambling and extravagant spending. He was often seen at high-end casinos and was known to have a taste for fast cars, beautiful women, and high-stakes games. But when the police went to his home to question him about the murder, he was nowhere to be found. The disappearance of Lord Lucan only added to the mystery surrounding the case. Despite numerous alleged sightings of him over the years, he has never been found, and the case remains unsolved to this day. The truth remains elusive, and the case remains one of the most fascinating and mysterious in British criminal history. It's a story of wealth, privilege, betrayal, and murder. Sandra Hensby was born on the 16th of September to parents Albert and Eunice. The family lived in Australia for a couple of years but returned to South London when Sandra was 10. Although she was bright, she was not academically minded. Still, Sandra thrived at school. She took part in everything and had many friends. After school, she started work as an apprentice hairdresser. But that wasn't for her. She tried her hand at secretarial work, but that also didn't pan out. Her caring nature made her best suited for a job in care, and she found employment as a nanny. Sandra met a builder called John, and they were planning on getting married when Sandra fell pregnant by him. The relationship broke down, and Sandra and her baby son moved in with her parents in 1964. Having suffered a bout of depression after a previous breakup, Sandra was aware of her mental health and feared that she would not be able to take care of her son as a single mother. Her parents stepped in and adopted her son, taking full responsibility for him. Sandra took a job at a retirement home, working as a carer for a while. But when the opportunity came to leave London, she embraced it. She moved to Portsmouth to live with her sister and was excited about her fresh start. It was here where she met Roger Rivett, her future husband. The couple moved back to Croydon and set up a lovely home. Roger was employed by the Royal Navy and was away a lot. Sandra worked at an orphanage and later at a cigarette company and was very self-sufficient. Roger was suspicious about infidelity on Sandra's part, so much so that the marriage ended in divorce in 1974. By this time, Sandra was eager to get back to childcare, and she was naturally nurturing and good with children. She got onto the books of the Belgravia Domestic Agency, and soon she had her first interview. Sandra met John Bingham, or Lord Lucan, for lunch. He was impressed with her and offered her the job of looking after his children in the home of his estranged wife. Lady Lucan was equally impressed and thankful to have the no-nonsense, easygoing Sandra as part of her household. It was a privilege to work for an aristocratic family, and 29-year-old Sandra felt fortunate to have landed the job. Lord Lucan was born Richard John Bingham on December 18, 1934, in Marylebone, London, to George Bingham, the 6th Earl of Lucan, and Caitlin Elizabeth Ann Dawson. He was the second of four children and had a brother and two sisters. John grew up in a privileged environment and was educated at Eton College, one of the most prestigious boarding schools in England. If the name rings a bell, it's probably because of the royal connection. John Bingham started gambling while in high school and continued it into his 20s. He started out as a bookie and sometimes skipped school to attend horse races. But as time went on, it became evident that he was especially successful in games of skill, like bridge and backgammon. As a young man, Lord John Bingham, as he was known, Lucan was his father's title, was good-looking, charming, and witty. He was a talented athlete and excelled at boxing, fencing, and squash. After finishing his education, he joined the British Army where he served in Germany in the Middle East. During this time, he learned to play poker and spent most of his free time gambling. Nearing his 30s, this playboy was one of the most eligible bachelors in all of England. Lord Bingham was tall, dark, and handsome, with a charming smile. And John liked to be flashy with his wealth. He drove an Aston Martin and raced powerboats. He spent endless money on his boat and was very competitive in races. His social standing and privilege helped him land a job at William Brandt Sons & Co., a merchant bank in London. His annual salary was £500, not a great amount for the time, suggesting that the job was perhaps only a formality. He was also receiving around £10,000 a year from his family trust, so it wasn't like he needed the job. One night, in 1960, he won big, taking £26,000 in a game of chemin de fer. Today, that would be about 10 times as much. The windfall gave him the nickname of Lucky Lucan. He quit his job, saying that having one was not worthwhile if one could make an entire year's income in one night at the tables. It was through one of his gambling connections, Bill Shand Kidd, that he met the young Veronica Duncan. Shand Kidd was married to Veronica's sister, and even though they had a privileged upbringing, they were not quite on the same social level as the Lucan family. It was a whirlwind romance, and John proposed to Veronica after only dating for a couple of months. With a petite stature and fine features, Veronica was very beautiful, but she was a bit demure, and his family was puzzled by the new union. Still, they made a dashing couple, and when they entered a room, people took notice.
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
John continued the high-rolling lifestyle of a professional gambler, and Veronica tagged along, dressed only in the best, and looked on as her husband squandered away thousands of pounds. The amicable Earl was a well-connected member of the British aristocracy, as was friends with many high-profile figures, including gambling impresario John Aspinall. Aspinall's gambling establishment, the Claremont Club in Mayfair, was a favorite haunt of Lord Lucan's. His friends often bailed him out after a big loss, and he never seemed overly concerned about his losses. It was all part of the deal as a professional gambler. When his father died, John received a handsome inheritance, but that was not all. He became the 7th Earl of Lucan, a prestigious title that opened many doors. And he also understood the importance of legacy. John and Veronica had 3 children together, Francis, George, and Camilla, and the family line was secured because of their son. For the most part, the children were raised by nannies, as their parents lived a carefree jet-set life. They traveled to Europe, throughout Britain, and spent their days lunching with friends, having copious amounts of champagne, and frequenting some of the most exclusive casinos in the world. Veronica was struggling to keep up with John's lifestyle and gambling debts, and started speaking up about it. John did not like this. People in their circle of friends claimed that a part of his reason for marrying Veronica was because John thought she would never cause him any trouble. He was always clear that he was of a higher social standing by descent, and Veronica was expected to feel thankful that he plucked her from obscurity. However, after having children, and seeing how reckless John was with the family fortune, Veronica felt compelled to stand up to him. John learned that Veronica's mental health had been a concern for years, even before their marriage. As a teenager, she was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and throughout their marriage, she had bouts of depression. Many years later, in an interview, Veronica admitted that she had some tough times and that she sometimes took to her bed for a couple of days. On one occasion, John took her on a drive through the country. She thought it was his way of trying to cheer her up. But when they stopped at a mental hospital, she realized he wanted to have her committed. She refused, but agreed to home treatment and medication. Eventually, the couple could no longer find a middle ground and decided to separate in 1972. John moved into a small apartment in Elizabeth Street nearby. A bitter custody battle for their children followed, with John using only the very best legal representatives. When John was a teen in the 1940s, he was shipped to the U.S. along with his siblings to live with a wealthy widow. He experienced the flashy side of wealth and privilege and would covet this lifestyle to the end. However, the fact that his parents were absent was a big deal for John. He did not want the same for his children and set out to prove that Veronica was not mentally fit to have custody. After many courtroom battles, Veronica was awarded custody, but the court mandated that she had to have a full-time nanny to assist her. John would have the children every other weekend, and he was not required to have any assistance during visitation. John took this ruling badly and made sure that he kept tabs on all Veronica's movements. Nannies came and went through what seemed like a revolving door at the Belgravia home of Lady Veronica Lucan. John befriended the nannies, hoping to gain information about his ex-wife. Using a small recording device, he also recorded his phone conversations with Veronica and would occasionally play it to his friends. Some nannies reported strange phone calls to the house, with heavy breathing on the other end of the line. Lucan was evidently stalking his family and had become obsessed with getting as much information as possible. In 1974, Lord Lucan decided to step in and help find a nanny that was prepared to sign on long-term. He was excited to meet Sandra Rivett, and relieved to have someone who seemed trustworthy and steady to be a part of his children's lives. Veronica welcomed Sandra and also saw long-term potential. She hoped that Sandra would provide some stability to the children after the tumultuous separation. Sadly, this was not going to be the case, as 9 weeks later, Sandra was murdered inside the Lucan home. Lord Lucan had been on a downward spiral since the separation. His gambling debts were at an all-time high, he drank more than ever, and when drunk, he even mentioned that he wanted to kill his ex-wife and throw her body into the sea. He tried to solicit hefty loans so he could buy his kids from Veronica. However, Sandra's appointment did seem to bring some calm to the Earl. Friends recalled him being more relaxed, in control of his emotions, his old self again. On the 6th of November, John met his uncle, who recalled that he was in good spirits. He also met a young friend who said there was nothing in his demeanor to suggest that he was worried or depressed. However, the next day, he failed to show up for lunch with two friends. He did meet a publisher friend at 6:30 for advice about an article he was writing, and they parted ways about 8. Lucan had also arranged to meet someone at the Claremont at 11 p.m., but was a no-show. Meanwhile, the evening of November 7th, 1974, was no different to any other in Lady Lucan's household. Around 9 p.m., the kids were in bed, settled for the night, and Veronica was watching TV in her room. Sandra usually had Thursday nights off, but this week, she had taken the Wednesday off to see her boyfriend, John Hankins. John spoke to Sandra on the phone at 8 p.m. that Thursday night, after which Sandra went upstairs to put the children to bed. Typically, Veronica would go downstairs to make herself a cup of tea, but this night, Sandra offered to do it. When she didn't return after 30 minutes, Veronica grew concerned and went downstairs to see what was taking her so long. Lady Lucan stood at the top of the basement stairs and called down to Sandra when she saw a man with Sandra's bloodied body. Before she could get away, she too was attacked. She eventually found a means to escape. She knew the corner pub, the Plumber's Arms, would be open and moved as fast as she could, painfully aware that she might lose consciousness at any moment. As soon as she made it inside, blood dripping from her head, she shouted, "Help me! Help me, I've just escaped from a murderer!" An ambulance took the 26-year-old Lady Lucan to St. George's Hospital, where she was treated for her injuries. Police arrived at her Belgravia home and kicked down the front door as it was locked. They made their way from one room to the next. At the bottom of the basement stairs, they found Sandra Rivett's bludgeoned body, half stuffed into a canvas bag. There were two cups and saucers laying on the floor in a pool of blood. The walls were covered in spatter, indicating that multiple blows were served. Picture frames on the wall leading up the stairs were distorted, like someone had rushed past. At the top of the stairs lay a lead pipe wrapped in a bandage. In the back garden, police found blood on foliage, suggesting that the perpetrator had fled that way. The children were still in their bedrooms, and Lord Lucan was nowhere to be found. One of the Lucan children had a friend who lived in Chester Square, and Veronica and John knew the parents. Madeline Florman later reported that someone rang her doorbell between 10 and 10:30 that night, but because her husband wasn't home, she did not open. Soon after that, she received a phone call but could not make out who the person on the other end of the line was. When police came around to her house, they found blood on the front doorstep. They believed it was Lucan, hoping to convince her to take care of his children. It was 11 p.m. when he called his mother. He told her that a terrible catastrophe had taken place at the Belgravia residence, and asked her if she could pick up the children and take them to her place for the night. The Dowager Countess went to fetch her grandchildren and met police officers at their home. She informed them about the strange call from her son, and an officer was tasked with escorting them back to her St. John's Wood home and wait in case Lucan called again. And he did, at 12:30. He told her that he noticed a struggle inside the house as he was walking past. When he entered, he saw a man attacking Veronica. The man left, and he tried to help his estranged wife, but she ran away, thinking he was the one who attacked her. Lucan told his mother that he would be in touch later to make arrangements regarding the children. When the police officer wanted to speak to him, he refused, but asked his mother to assure police he would contact them in the morning. Where Lucan was when he made the phone call has never been established. But after he hung up, he left London for East Sussex, to the country home of his close friends, the Maxwell Scotts. Uckfield is located 42 miles outside of London, and Susan Maxwell Scott was home alone when Lucan arrived, as her husband Ian was away. Lucan was disheveled and in shock, and told her the same version of the story that he had told his mother. He told her he was on his way home from Claremont Club to change for dinner when he walked past his ex-wife's home. The Venetian blinds were partially open, and he caught a glimpse of a man attacking Veronica. He entered, using his own key, and found Veronica being struck by an unidentified man. He claimed that he slipped in a pool of blood and the assailant ran away. In the confusion of the moment, his wife, completely hysterical and confused due to a serious head injury, mistook him for the attacker. The morning of November 8, 1974, Lord Lucan left Uckfield and was never seen again.
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam. A charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
Police interviewed Lady Lucan in hospital on the night of the attack. Her face was bruised, and she had severe lacerations on her skull, but she was clear in her recount of events. She told police that when she went downstairs to check on Sandra, she saw the nanny's bloodied body on the kitchen floor. A tall man was trying to bundle her body into a canvas bag. Shocked, she screamed, and the attacker turned to her, caught up with her, and hit her over the head multiple times. She screamed again, and he barked at her to shut up. As soon as he spoke, she recognized the voice. It was her estranged husband. According to Veronica, realizing it was John, she lashed out and bit his fingers. Then he pushed her down, face first onto the carpet. She managed to grab a hold of his testicles and squeezed as hard as she could. This disabled him for a while, and she stood up, asking where Sandra was. He refused to tell her at first, then was forced to admit that he had killed her. Veronica knew that her own life was in danger, and she had to think on her feet. She told John that she would help him evade capture, but only if he helped her tend to her head wound first. He agreed and accompanied her upstairs, where he ushered her onto her bed, covering the pillow with towels so it wouldn't stain. He then went into the bedroom to fetch barbiturates and a wet towel to clean her wound. Lady Veronica Lucan saw the opportunity to escape and ran downstairs, out the front door. After being informed about her situation, staff at the Plumber's Arms raised the alarm with the police. Investigators set out to find Lord Lucan. He was not at his apartment, yet his wallet, passport, and other personal effects were there. His Mercedes was parked outside, the engine cold. It had not been driven that night as the battery was also flat. He had not been in touch with his mother again, and no one seemed to know where he could be. The investigation into Sandra's murder commenced the next morning, and her autopsy concluded that she died of blunt force trauma, and it was ruled that the lead pipe found at the scene was the murder weapon. In the days following his disappearance, some of Lord Lucan's friends received letters he wrote on the night of the murder and sent from Uckfield the next day. The stationery had blood smears on. This is the letter he wrote to his brother-in-law, Bill Shand Kidd. Dear Bill, the most ghastly circumstances arose tonight, which I briefly described to my mother. When I interrupted the fight at Lower Belgrave Street and the man left, Veronica accused me of having hired him. I took her upstairs and sent Frances up to bed and tried to clean her up. She lay doggo for a bit and when I was in the bathroom left the house. The circumstantial evidence against me is strong and that V will say it was all my doing. I will also lie doggo for a bit, but I am only concerned for the children. If you can manage it, I want them to live with you. Coots, trustees, St. Martin's Lane, Mr. Wall, will handle school fees. V has demonstrated her hatred for me in the past and would do anything to see me accused. For George and Francis to go through life knowing their father had stood in the dock for attempted murder would be too much. When they are old enough to understand, explain to them the dream of paranoia and look after them. Yours ever, John. Bill handed the letter to police, who kept it in the case file and would eventually consider it to be a suicide note of sorts. In the days leading up to the attack, Lucan had borrowed a friend's Ford Corsair. On the 10th of November, 3 days after Sandra's murder, this vehicle was found in New Haven, a short distance from the port. Police found blood inside the car, and in the trunk was a portion of the lead pipe found at the murder scene. New Haven has a regular ferry service to France. It was anyone's guess if Lucan boarded a ferry and fled to Europe, or if someone provided a boat which he used to escape. Or did he purposely park the car near the port to throw the police off his trail? Because of Lucan's disappearance, law enforcement considered him to be the prime suspect in the murder of Sandra Rivett. They questioned all of his aristocratic friends, suspecting that someone was hiding him. If they did, they did a good job, because authorities never found him. Police never really suspected anyone else of the murder, Sandra's ex-husband, Robert Rivett, was questioned, and he was ruled out as a suspect, seeing as he had an alibi. They also looked at Sandra's boyfriend, John, but concluded that he had nothing to do with the murder. While there was no definitive evidence that Lucan was responsible for the crime, there is a significant amount of circumstantial evidence that pointed towards his guilt. A year after that fateful night, an inquest ruled Sandra Rivett's death a murder. And even though Lord Lucan had vanished, the coroner deemed the evidence strong enough to find him guilty. After this trial, English law was changed so a suspect could not be charged, tried, and found guilty with their whereabouts unknown. After Veronica's release from hospital, the court ruled that the children could remain with her, and she continued to live in the Belgravia home. The disappearance of Lord Lucan captured the imagination of England and beyond. Theories as to his whereabouts range from the plausible to the outlandish. Some believe he fled the country and is living abroad under an assumed name. Some think Lucan was a victim of a mafia-style hit, and his body was disposed of in the sea. Others believe that he jumped into the water at New Haven, committing suicide in the immediate aftermath of events. There was even a rumor that he was fed to a tiger in John Aspinall's zoo. There is also a theory that Lucan was sheltered by members of the aristocracy, and his disappearance was part of a conspiracy to protect him from prosecution. John Aspinall said in an interview that if Lucan had come to him after the murder, he would have done whatever he could to help his friend. He emphasized, "If you're going to hand over your friend to the authorities, albeit the law, you are no longer a person in my view." John Aspinall's theory was that the Earl had taken a boat out to sea from New Haven, tied weights to his body, then scuttled the boat, ending his own life. Police searched for Lucan all across the globe, from South America to Africa and India, and were unable to locate him. After his disappearance, he never touched his bank accounts, and by all accounts, has not been in touch with family or friends. In 2003, a former detective claimed that Lucan had been living in Goa as a hippie called Barry Halpin, or Jungle Barry. However, Barry was a musician from Merseyside who had decided to move to Goa for an alternative lifestyle. He was not Lucan. A man named Roger Woodgate in New Zealand was also pointed out to be Lucan's new identity. However, he was 10 years younger and 5 inches shorter than the missing Earl. The most popular theory is that he fled to Africa. Police in Cape Town followed a man resembling Lucan and lifted fingerprints from a glass he had used, but the man was not Lucan. In 2012, a report emerged claiming that a former secretary of John Aspinall's had witnessed meetings between Aspinall and financier Sir James Goldsmith, during which they discussed Lord Lucan. She alleged that Aspinall asked her to book trips for Lucan's children to Kenya and Gabon, one in 1979 and the other in 1981. These trips were arranged so Lucan could see his kids from a distance, not to have direct contact. The secretary said John Aspinall intended to announce Lucan's death in 2000, and she inferred that Lucan had died in Africa. However, Aspinall himself died that year, and Sir James Goldsmith 3 years before that, so this information could not be corroborated. The two Scotland Yard officers who spent years looking for Lucan landed on two different theories. Superintendent Roy Ransom thought that he killed the nanny by mistake, thinking he could dispose of his wife and get custody of the children he loved. When he realized the error, he killed himself in some remote spot, like a lord and a gentleman. But Superintendent Dave Gehring came to another conclusion. Lucan is still hiding somewhere, and is the only man who knows the full story. He is a lord and a gentleman, but he's still a gambler, and he is still gambling on the odds that no one will ever find him. This was many years ago. If Lucan is still alive today, he would be about 90 years old. Legally, he was noted presumed dead in 1992, and then officially declared dead in 1999. A death certificate was issued as recent as 2016, declaring Richard John Bingham, the Right Honorable Earl of Lucan, dead. His son George inherited his title, making him the 8th Earl of Lucan. George spoke in an interview in the documentary, The Hunt for Lord Lucan, and said he doubts his father was in fact the attacker that night. He feels police never considered any other suspects, and that Lucan was deemed guilty by the media before the inquest was complete. George theorizes that his father was not completely innocent, but that the intention was something else entirely. According to George, he thinks Lucan Sr. hired a man to break into the family home, perhaps to stage a robbery for insurance fraud. Remember, his finances were quite dire at the time. The lead pipe was perhaps intended as a tool to break a window, and it was bandaged to reduce the noise. The robber was given a canvas bag for items from the home. Meanwhile, Lucan waited outside in an inconspicuous car, and when it took longer than expected, he went inside to see what was going on. As soon as he entered, he realized that the plan had gone awry. He chased the man away and helped Veronica upstairs. George feels that Lucan, who is obsessed with the welfare of his children, would not have killed their nanny inside their home, especially not at that hour when the eldest, Francis, was still awake. George feels that his mother, in shock after suffering a blow to the head and by her own admission on heavy medication for her depression at the time, understandably concluded that Lucan was the attacker. The fact that Lucan helped her and tended to her injuries makes George question if his mother's summation of the attack was correct. Sadly, all of the Bingham children were left in the dark, grappling with what could have happened that night, and ultimately, what happened to their father. In 2017, 80-year-old Lady Lucan was found dead in her Belgravia home after ingesting a cocktail of alcohol and drugs. She spent her final years in seclusion, having no contact with her children. She left her entire estate to charity. This case was overshadowed by the disappearance of Lord Lucan, but let's not forget the victim. Sandra Rivett was a daughter, a mother, a friend, a girlfriend. She was taken from her loved ones, who never quite felt that justice was served. As her son Neil said, "We have to get to the truth and justice for Sandra. A horrible death, a young woman beaten, my mother." The disappearance of Lord Lucan in 1974 has remained one of the most enduring unsolved mysteries in British history. And although he was found guilty of Sandra's death, it is not entirely certain that he was the one who struck the blows that killed her. One can only hope that the truth will come out someday. If you'd like to read more about this case, have a look at the resources used for this episode in the show notes. Also, visit us on social media to see more about today's case. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also check out our channel on YouTube. If you like what we do here at Evidence Locker, subscribe on Apple Podcast or wherever you are listening right now, and kindly leave a 5-star review. This was the Evidence Locker. Thank you for listening.